Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvina Vatitamastu Mahavidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Let's read through 17, which is the one we did yesterday without really doing it. I want to just translate it and move on to 18. So, antastadi sahayvakshayihi bahiryati punah punah. Bahiryati punah punah. Vasya buddhistha chanchalyam Sakshinyaropyate vritha. This says, antastadihi saha eva akshaihi. The buddhi, which is inside, interior to the body, together with the sense organs, right, together with the sense organs, goes outside, means looks outside and objectifies all of these namarupas, all of these names and forms, again and again. Basya buddhista chanchalyam, all of the motion and activity of that is taking place in the buddhi, that belongs to the buddhi, buddhista chanchalyam. So the chanchalya, all of this activity, agitation, going in and out, going here and there, thinking about this, thinking about that, all of this activity abides in the buddhi, which is basya. It is illumined. In the illumined buddhi, which is aropyate, which is superimposed, the buddhi is superimposed on the sakshi. So the important word, vritta, means falsely. Falsely, it's not real. It's not that the superimposition is not a real superimposition, it's mitya. There's nothing actually happening there, you know, in terms of superimposition. And yet there is that superimposition because of self-ignorance. So the word aropa means superimposition, as does the word. So you have aropa. You also have this word adhyasa. Adhyasa also means superimposition. The full term that we use is anyonya adhyasa. Anyonya means other, other means mutual. Each one affects the other. So anyonya adhyasa, mutual superimposition. So what's being said here is that all of the activity, all of the knowing, all of the thinking, all of the emoting, all of the using the sense organs to perceive, to objectify objects, everything that takes place really in the whole antakarana, not just the buddhi, the whole antakarana, means the buddhi, the manas, the citta, the ahankara, all of these buddhi vrittis, all of these thought modifications are taking place in the buddhi. So all of that movement is superimposed, all of that activity that belongs to the buddhi is superimposed onto the sakshi, onto the consciousness, which is as though reflected in the buddhi. And so the word there, and that is vritta, that is mitya. There really is no even reflection. Really, there is only the sat-chit-atma, consciousness. And the mitya, the maya, has no independent being apart from that consciousness, like the pot has no independent being apart from the clay, or the snake has no independent being apart from the rope. Right, so there is, in a sense, no superimposition because there's no second being. The being that the mitya buddhi enjoys is me. The consciousness that the mitya buddhi enjoys is me. Right? It's not like there's me and then a reflection of me and the buddhi. So there's some distance, you know, like if I hold up a mirror to the sun's up there, and here's the mirror with the sun reflecting in it. Here, there's no distance at all. What is actually here is just consciousness with this incredible display that we call the creation, this manifestation of infinite knowledge. This body, mind, sense organs are part of that infinite display that has as its adhishtana, as its reality, the Satchit consciousness, which, when I say the word I am or me, I'm referring to that. I am that infinite non-dual consciousness. There's not a bigger me that I have to discover, oh, I am that me, there's this infinite consciousness behind me. No. When you say me or I, we're talking about that non-dual Brahman, that non-dual consciousness, which is the very adhishtana of the mitya, so the very adhishtana of the mind, okay, of the buddhi. Now the problem is, from the standpoint of me, from my own standpoint, from consciousness, there's no adhyasa, there's nothing except me. But from the standpoint of the mitya mind, there is a mutual superimposition, this anyonya adhyasa, or this anyonya aropa. Same thing, adhyasa aropa. We say mutual superimposition, and normally in English when you say mutual, you mean, okay, the atma is superimposing something onto the mind, and the mind is superimposing something onto the atma. But that's not possible, because the atma, the self, is not superimposing anything. It's non-dual. It doesn't have that function of it doesn't have any ajnanam. It doesn't have any parts to go superimposing something. So the aropa is only on the part of the buddhi. And what they mean by the anyonya, the mutual, is that my mind itself, first it takes itself to be me. So the buddhi, the mind, becomes the conscious being. That's the first part of this anyonya. The mind becomes the conscious being. And then the conscious being takes on all of the attributes of the mind. Not from the standpoint of consciousness, but from the standpoint of the buddhi. So the buddhi will say, yes, I, the conscious being, so the buddhi now is the I, is the conscious being, and I have all these attributes. So the buddhi becomes consciousness, and consciousness has all of these attributes now. It's emotional, it's full of ignorance, it has this problem and that problem, it's thinking about this, thinking about that, using the sense organs to perceive the world, all the while taking itself to be me because of self-ignorance. The tremendous, I'll use the word, illusory power of mitya, of something that is mitya. It's a tremendous illusory power, because the mitya has no independent being and is not separate at all from the adhishtana. I mean, say that, look at the tremendous illusory power of the pot. The pot is kind of enjoying the consciousness clay, you know. Of course, it is going to take itself to be the clay, right? And the clay is in the shape of a pot. This is how it is. How could it not think that? How could your mind not think that I am the self? When you are the self, just like the clay is the pot, you are the self. But the problem is then the self takes on all the qualities of the mind. And the mind is continually changing and has emotions and can be unstable, suffers from ignorance, is certainly not all knowledge, you know. So the self takes on all of those qualities. That's what we mean by aropa, the anyonya adhyasa, or the anyonya, the mutual superimposition, is just from the standpoint of the mind. The one side of the anyonya is the mind takes itself to be the self, and then it takes the self to have all of the qualities and attributes of the mind. That's the second side of the bird, so to speak. Second wing of the bird. So, and all of that is mitya, because when you gain knowledge, it's mitya. When you gain knowledge, that viveka, what we call viveka jnanam, that discriminative knowledge, the discriminative knowledge, what we mean by discrimination is two things are appearing as one. I am the conscious being, and my mind is thinking like this and that and having these and that emotions. That is two things, as though two things appearing. One is mitya, one is satya. Two things appearing as one entity. Viveka, the word viveka, or Viveka Jnanam comes in, when I have to discriminate or differentiate something that appears as one, but is actually two. I gave the example a couple of days ago as the red hot iron ball. It appears as one until that Viveka kicks in because of teaching, because of knowledge, and realize that actually this is fire and this is the red hot iron ball, and this is the iron ball, and they're superimposed on each other and look like a red hot iron ball. But one is fire and one is iron. The same thing here. As I recognize there are many prakriyas to bring about this viveka, this discrimination, just for the sake of my mind, for the sake of my buddhi, and it's not very hard, because present, immediately present, is the mind which is known, the buddhi which is known, and the conscious being, the self, and both are quite different. The buddhi, the mind, goes on changing, chanchalyam, it goes on changing, right? The self never changes. Conscious being, me, the me, this word me lands on Brahman, it lands on myself. I am ever present. I'm not changing. I take myself to be whatever has taken place, but I'm still there. And so the viveka has to take place between me, the one who is absolutely stable and totally asanga, totally unaffected by whatever is going on in the mind. Even deep, dark emotions, which are hard to bear, they are hard for the mind to bear. They're hard for the body to bear, right? But they're not hard for the self to bear, just like if the sun is illuminating this deep, dark, tremendous, huge, you know, rain cloud with lots of lightning and thunder, you know, that is taking place, and it has its own affect and its own whatever it is. And if you're standing on the ground looking up at it and experiencing it, if you're getting, you know, drenched, then it can be scary. But from the standpoint of the sun, it's just simply illuminating it. It's not getting wet. It's not getting dark. It's not getting anything. It just simply is. And that's exactly what's going on here. But with the sun's way up there, the rain cloud's down here, and then I'm standing on the ground looking up. And as an ajnani, I'm looking up at my, as though the mind, the rain cloudy mind, and thinking, oh, and so I was joking the other day with Swamiji, you know, when the rain clouds have to go away, you know, I know myself. I know myself, Swamiji. But the rain clouds are always there. And when will they go, Swamiji? When will they go? When will all of the different kinds of thoughts go so that I can experience myself? That means that the knowledge has just not happened yet. That's all. It's not a big deal. But it's a big deal to know that, oh, that's not what it is. That is not what it is. You're not the person standing looking up at the rain clouds. You're the self illumining the rain clouds. And that self is not wet. Right? It's not wet. It's just itself. You're just always yourself. And we don't choose, we wouldn't choose the negative spectrum of vrittis, thought mind. We wouldn't choose those because they really are not, don't resonate with my own nature. It's like having some foreign body there. So I didn't choose them, but they also don't cover me or change me in any way. Nor do the positive spectrum. We would choose those, but they also don't cover me or change me in any way. For the one who has viveka, I am equally present in my full whole set. In the presence of the negative vrittis, the thunderstorms, and the sunny days. There is literally no change. If you think there is a change, what is happening is that you're feeling your mind is overwhelmed by the power of the painful vritti. But if the viveka is there, you are there as you always are, and so is the painful vritti. Both are there. Both are equally there. One is mithya, one is satyam. The mithya cannot cover the satyam or do anything to it, for that matter. And that is what you recognize. The ahankara shifts to the atma. The aham. The ahankara becomes the aham. And the ahankara, as it's working out here, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm going here, I'm going there, I'm seeing this, I'm seeing that, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that. That ahankara, we still use it, as I was joking. We don't say, well, my body is going to walk to the store now, you know. We don't say that, you know. My mind is thinking about this and that. We don't say that. We say, I'm thinking. I'm going to take a walk to the store. We're like normal people. but we know what we're talking about. That aham, that I is mithya. It's not what I really mean. Like say the teacher says, you know, I'm going to walk to the store. You know, you are going to walk to the store. I thought you were Brahman. Brahman can't walk to the store, you know. That's somebody said, God, they says, it's okay, settle down. Yeah, okay. So with that, this next verse is continuing on, explaining more, giving a little drishtanta, another illustration. So it says, repeat after me. Grahantara gataswalpa. Grahantara gataswalpaha, grahantara gataswalpaha, gavakshat atapochalaha, gavakshat atapochalaha, tatrahaste narityamane, tatrahaste narityamane, nrityati vatapoyata, nrityati vatapoyata, griha antara gataha, Swalpaha gavakshat, 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 atapaha achalaha, tatra haste narityamane, nrityati eva atapaha yata. So it says, griha, just the vocabulary, griha antaragataha, griha antaragataha, it has gone, gata, it has gone antara, inside the griha. This is a compound that says it has gone inside the house. Okay. Gata, griha is house, antara is inside, gata is it has gone. So it has gone inside the house. What has? So it says, well, first, so I'm just going to do this in word order and just kind of make you get the Sanskrit. Swalpaha means like a small amount. In this case, it's going to be, in this context, it'll be like just a thin streak. But it's a small amount of swalpa, just a little bit, swalpa. Gavakshat, a gavaksha is a small hole, like in a wall. See, in this wall here, there's a little tiny hole that goes into the outside like this, a little small hole, okay? So gavakshat means from this small hole, swalpaha atapaha. Atapaha means sunlight. A streak of sunlight. Swalpaha atapaha achalaha. So imagine there's just a streak of sunlight, which is achala. It doesn't move at all. It's just a streak. Just a little bit of light coming through from the outside. It's just motionless. Just comes through. It's just sunlight. There's no motion at all. So it's coming through. This little streak of sunlight is coming through this hole in the wall into the house. That griha antaragataha. So this little streak of sunlight coming through this gavacha, this hole in the wall, is entering into the house. So there, in that situation, so here's we've got this streak of sunlight. Haste narityamane. There, in that streak, if a hand, the hasta, is dancing around like this. Here's the streak. And so here's a hand, and it's just dancing around like this, dancing around. Okay. So when a hand is dancing around like that, nrityati eva atapaha yata. We'll take the first part. Nrityati eva atapaha. So it says, when the hand is dancing around like this, the atapa, the sunlight, seems to be dancing. right? Because of all of the shadows that you're creating. So the sunlight seems to be changing and dancing, but actually the only thing that's happening is the hand is dancing around, right? Not the sunlight. Okay. So this whole sentence says, just as, so the yata, it says, just like when the sunlight, which is changeless, achala, free of any type of motion, just a little streak of that sunlight enters into a house, through a hole inside the house. When that's the case, then just as when a hand is dancing around in that streak of sunlight, the sunshine seems to be moving, dancing. It seems to be dancing. Nrititi eva. It seems to be dancing. Then what? We have to go to the next verse. Okay. Nijastanas titasakshi bahirantara gamagamau akurvan buddhi chanchalyat karotiva tata. So here, nija, let's compound these three words, nija, stana, stitaha. One word, three words in one word making a compound. Nija, stana, stitaha, sakshi, bahihi, antaha, gama, gamau. Bahir antar gamagamau. Bahihi antaha gamagamau. Akurvan buddhi chanchalyat. Compound buddhi chanchalyat. Karoti eva. Tata. Similarly, says to us, tata. Similarly, in each, and this happens many, many times, so there's many situations like this. It says the nijastani stittaha sakshi. The sakshi, the witness, is abiding stittaha. It's remaining nijam self. It's remaining in its own place, like swayam. It remains there in its own place, in its own swarupa. It's not moving around at all. Nothing is happening. It simply is. Right? It's free from time. It's not doing anything. Just being what it is. Staying, just keeping to itself without any choice in the matter. The sakshi just remains as itself in its own place, not moving around. Does that sakshi bahihi antaha gamagamau akurvan? Okay. That sakshi akurvan. Akurvan means not doing. Not doing what? It's a kshetra. Not doing what? Not coming or going, gama gamal. Not coming or going. Gama means going, agama means coming. So the sakshi is not bahir gama. It's not going outside, nor is it coming inside. Bahi means outside. So if you look at this compound, you have outside, inside, going, coming. Those are the words in this compound. So the akurvan means it's not doing this. What is it not doing? It's not going outside, bahir gama, and it's not agama, it's not antara agama, it's not coming inside. So it's just saying the sakshi is neither coming nor going. It's not going outside, it's not coming inside. Okay, so just sakshi is just simply abiding there as its own, in its own being. Then it says, buddhi chanchalyat karoti eva. But similarly to the dancing hand, right, making the light, the sunshine as though move, giving that appearance. So similarly here, the buddhi chanchalyat, because of the activity, the movement of the buddhi, the movement of the mind, it appears to do that. Karoti. Similarly, karoti, it karoti eva. Eva means it as though, it appears. It appears to do that. What? It appears to be coming and going. It's going outside, it's coming inside, it's doing all kinds of things. As though I am doing that. Right? Why does the Sakshi appear to be doing that? Well, because that's what the Buddhi is doing. Right? The Buddhi is doing that. I am illumining the Buddhi, just keeping to myself as my own non-dual me. But in the presence of the Buddhi is like that hand. You know, that hand. And so the Buddhi, I seem to be dancing to the tune of the Buddhi. Whatever the Buddhi is doing, I am doing. If the Buddhi is using the sense organs and looking and wandering about outside, I'm using the sense organs wandering about outside. Whatever activity is taking place in this mithya Buddhi, in this mithya world, that's what I'm doing. Especially the Buddhi. The Buddhi, when we went through these four attributes or four categories of the antakarana, of that inner instrument that we call the mind, there's the Buddhi, you know, the one that really has probably the deepest, the most subtle, the innermost part of the manas, of the antakarana, because it's more subtle, it can objectify everything else. So there's the Buddhi, the fluctuating mind, there's the memories, the ahankara. So this whole antakarana, because it is sattva, is reflecting me. So there's nothing to stop it from taking itself to be the conscious being. And so even though consciousness, me, does not move at all. My own presence, the Buddhi exists in me as mithya, but it doesn't touch or change me in any way. So right now, this is actually a reality that you have to recognize. It's not just some words or something. The fact is to be recognized by you, not just to be believed in as a nice idea, but to actually be experientially, to recognize the truth of it. Not just with your head, but to actually recognize, to differentiate, to have that viveka, that the me never is touched or changed in any way. It just abides in its own self. It is non-dual. Nothing can touch it. Nothing can change it. It can't change itself. It is non-dual. I'm always ever present. The Buddhi, along with the rest of the universe, you know, exists in me. It is mithya. It is an incidental attribute of Brahman, of the self. And so every part of this creation, the creation itself, has me for its being. But just talking from the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs, the mind, which is sattva, will naturally, because of self-ignorance, become subject to this anyonya adhyasa, this mutual superimposition, because of self-ignorance. And so I am just always remaining the same. I'm not having an ignorant mind from the standpoint of myself. I don't even have a mind. I just simply am, very simply, me. And this maya belongs to me as an incidental attribute. Means it is mine, but it doesn't bring its mithya. It doesn't bring about any change to me at all. But from the standpoint of the mithya, which is body, mind, sense organs, is part of the whole creation, the whole thing is mithya, the sattva mind, right, is in the absolutely natural, beginningless position of identifying itself with me. And so it's suffering from this self-ignorance, and by its nature moving around and doing this and doing that, you know, dancing in its all of its movement, means I am dancing from its standpoint. But that is not true. That superimposition is not true. And therefore, because it is not true, because it is a product of ignorance, by removing the knowledge, by giving knowledge to remove that ignorance, by giving knowledge of the self, of yourself, and to give knowledge of yourself requires these teaching methodologies which will help your mind differentiate its objectifiable experience, the objectifiable experience of everything that comes into the Buddhi, the continual change and motion, and this thought is removed, and this thought comes, this thought goes. All of this activity, right, is illumined by me. I am the self of all of that activity. But all of that activity is mithya. It doesn't touch or change me in any way. And so I now need, through the prakriyas, teaching methodologies that can hold up a mirror to that fact, that experiential fact, you know, that mirror has to be held up, and then what do you see? Oh. I've never moved. I can't move. I am free from time. I am free from change. And I've always been that way. My God. I've always been this. I have always been the self. I've always been myself. I have never, ever been bound. Bondage itself is just... It is just a product of self-ignorance, and it belongs to the mind, and it has to be removed from the mind. It has to be removed from the mind. So we'll say it has to be removed from the buddhi. You can't wish it away. Or you can't say, okay, there is an Atma which is me, and I want to experience that. I, the buddhi, want to experience that. Right? The ahankara hasn't shifted at all. But I want to experience my non-dual self. And so you do meditations, and maybe you do have a non-dual experience. The buddhi does have a non-dual experience. And you know that's me, because it is you. Nobody can tell you it's not you. It's the very me that has always been you. But this is what happens. The buddhi, which has self-ignorance, because of pranayama meditation techniques, all of which are extremely powerful, you have a non-dual experience. And then, of course, it ends. It only lasts for a little while. So then the buddhi comes back and it says, wow, I had this non-dual experience, and it was wonderful, and it is the truth. I need to have that again. I want that again. I want that experience again. That's ajnanam. These experiences they have no context. They're a wonderful, incredible experience. They're like, the means of knowledge involved in that is called pratyeksha. I can have an experience of something in this room, and I can see it, but I may have no idea what it is. But I can have the experience of it. I have no knowledge of it, but I have the experience of it. I have no idea what to do with it. Like that little greater thing that Mitchell brought. What the heck is this? I don't know if you see it. That's yours, right? That little... What is that? What is that thing? I can see the thing, but I have no idea what to do with that. Until I remembered that Uma said, I think Mitchell is going to bring his little thingy, whatever it is. No. And she even gave a name, and I had no idea what she was talking about. But when I saw it, I thought, oh, that must be what Uma was talking about, these little greater things. I had no idea. That's pratyeksha. I did have a direct, immediate experience, though, of the object, its color, etc. I just didn't know what it was. Experience is not knowledge. It's one form of knowledge. It's an experience of the nama-rupa. The name and form. I had an experience of not the name, but of the form. I had an experience of that form. When you have a meditative experience, you have a wonderful experience of the swarupa form, the swarupa of Brahman. And you, so what happens? What happens when you have an experience like that? It's just an experience that you come back from. The mind will talk about it. It will be a tremendous beacon light, you know, like something that's, it makes you know that there's something, that there is a truth. There is something. It is there. You've experienced it. Nobody can tell you haven't. And now you have to know what that is. And the experience, of course, goes away. You don't know where that experience came from, who it belongs to, what it is, but you know it's the truth. You just don't know how to get it back. You know? And you don't know what to do now. But at least you know that this meditative experience was something incredible and something true also. So it can really make you into a mumukshu, because you want to know. You may for a while just want to get it back, you know. And then you can become a yogi and keep meditating, hoping to get that experience back. And then you lose it and you meditate, get it back. Meditate, get it back. And then you think, someday I'll just be able to have that experience and not come back. But your ahankara is still with the buddhi. That's ajnanam. That is ajnanam. You still have an ahankara. The ahankara is not mitya for you. The aham hasn't made the shift. So if there's a teaching methodology that allows the aham to make the shift and the creation to become mitya, whatever the culture may be, that's fine. It's kind of like, you know, if a person, a scientist, is teaching about gravity, you know, in French or Swahili or whatever language, Chinese, Japanese, French, all of the different, you know, Hindi, it's still teaching about gravity. You know? That's knowledge. If it can teach about gravity and use drishtantas and illustrations and experiments to show how it works, it doesn't really matter if the illustrations are from different cultures. They're still illustrations of gravity. And so we happen to have this knowledge in the form of the Upanishads because that's how Bhagavan hooked us up. It's nothing to say one way or another about any other tradition or any other spiritual teaching, but what is that spiritual teaching? What is it? Does it give you the knowledge of non-duality? Does it give you knowledge of yourself? That is the issue, nothing else. It's not about the language or the culture or the name of the scripture. It's about the knowledge. That's it. Here there's some knowledge to be gained, and it's the knowledge of yourself, and that self is there to be known. That's the thing. This creation is mithya. It can be proven in many different ways, using many different prakriyas. There's nothing you can do about it. There's something to know. And once you know, nothing can really negate it because the logic is very simple and very profound, and there's nothing to contest there. But whatever the doubts are, in terms of recognizing your experience, subject-object experience here, using these prakriyas, those doubts are very, very precious. Because the resolution of those doubts is knowledge. The resolution of any given doubt resolves that doubt. The doubt is gone. The doubt is gone when the knowledge is there. The knowledge in reference to that doubt. And so say you think, well, you know, I just put those doubts on the shelf and I know enough, you know. But those doubts sitting on the shelf are creating an underground tension. The doubts are very important. They're very much a part of this teaching. So Didyaranya is using these drishtantas, these illustrations, because illustrations kind of help your mind to just kind of sit with it and to recognize it. But they have to be the time of teaching, hopefully, and it's not always the case, but more often than not for Mumukshu, it is the case that the mind of the teacher and the mind of the student are just one mind. There's no teacher, there's no student. There's knowledge taking place. And both are hooked into it. And then when the class is over, you know, then you walk away and I walk away and that's that. But when the teaching is taking place, you're seeing it. Unless your mind's distracted by your own issues and upset about this or that or whatever. Anyway. You have the I think I have a different version. That's okay. Let me just see. Oh. Okay, I like your version better. This happens. There's different, you know, versions, and sometimes different words are used. And so here for verse 20, in verse 20 at the end of the line, you have tau ubao at the end of the top line. Let me find my place again. Verse 20. I have ki tau ubel. It doesn't make... I have to think about that. I'm going to do the tau ubel. Yeah. We'll just chant this. I'll say a few things about it, and then we'll go into it tomorrow. Okay. Verse 20. Nabahyo nan tarasakshi.
Nabahyo nan tarasakshi.
Uderdeshau.
Tau ubel.
Buddhyajyashesha-sanshanto yatra-bhatyasti-tatra-sahara
yatra-bhatyasti-tatra-sahara
na-bahyaha na-antaraha sakshi buddhe deshau tau ubhau Buddhyadi ashesha samshantau yatra bhati asti tatra saha. This is nabahyaha na antaraha sakshi. The sakshi is not outside, nabahyaha na antaraha. For the sakshi, there is no outside, there is no inside. Nabahyaha na antaraha sakshi. Buddhehe deshau tau ubau. Both of those, tau is those, both of those belong to deshe deshau, are in the place of the buddhi. They belong, it's like saying they belong to the buddhi. So just imagine, okay, here's the sakshi, here's the buddhi. You know, who is experiencing inside and outside? Is that a characteristic of the self? That the self has an inside and an outside? Or is it the buddhi? So it's the buddhi. The self doesn't have this inside and outside. The buddhi has an inside and outside. It can go inside. It can direct itself inside. It can direct itself outside. That's what we can do. We had several verses on that. So looking outside, I have the adambriti. This, this, this. I could name every one of them. This, this, this. I'm looking outside. Looking inside, it's the ahambriti. I, myself. Okay, so the buddhi, looking inside, is me. It says, I am looking at that. Right? So I have the karta, which is the ahankara, the activity, and then the object. So the buddhi can look inside. There's the aham, the ahankara actually, because it's identifying with it, looks outside, and there's all these namarupas that I see. What about the sakshi? What about awareness? Pure sat-chit-chid-vapahu, pure awareness. Does the sakshi have an inside and outside? Can it look this way or that way? No. There's no inside or outside. There's no top, up, or down. There's no looking over to the east or looking over to the west. There is no looking. There is no duality. There is no partition. The sakshi is non-directional. Free from time and space, I simply am. I'm not I am, I am conscious being, and whatever comes into its vicinity as though, in terms of the mitya, is known. But there is no motion of any kind. So here, that type of vritti that is directed outward or inward, that belongs to the buddhi. That the place for that, where that exists, the desha for that, is the buddhi, not for the sakshi. The sakshi doesn't look in any direction, up or down or internally either. It is non-dual, non-dual conscious being, me, just simply me. So then it says, buddhyadi ashesha samshantau yatra bhati asti tatra saha. When the buddhi itself becomes, we'll go into this more next time, but just to tell you, when the buddhi itself settles down and just becomes completely quiet, buddhi stands for the buddhyadi, means the buddhi, the manas, the citta, you know, the ahankara, and the whole buddhi just becomes shanti. Then for it, when the buddhi itself comes, that buddhi, in the shanti of that buddhi, yatra bhati asti tatra saha. That is where there is the isness or the shining. Wherever that is, wherever that Atma is, wherever that self is, that is where there is the Asti Bhati. That is very self-evident to the mind that has that Shanti. So we'll go into that next week. I mean, next week. Yeah, next Sunday. Next Thursday.
Okay. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.